This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
How a hurricane could help avert a collision between the federal government and its borrowing. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio, coming to you from the studios of the BBC in London this week. Today, the U.S. House of Representatives is scheduled to vote on a roughly $8 billion funding package to help people get back on track after the torrents of Hurricane Harvey. There's widespread support for the new spending and thus a tempting vehicle for another of the Trump administration's financial priorities, the leeway to borrow more money. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports from Washington.
The Harvey funding bill has bipartisan support. Raising the debt limit, not so much. Romina Baca is a federal spending expert with the Heritage Foundation.
They're talking about using the Harvey relief package to do something that would otherwise be very politically unpopular, and that is raising the debt ceiling without first cutting spending.
Raising the debt limit is a must, or in a few weeks, Treasury won't have the cash to pay the government's bills. Shai Acabas is with the Bipartisan Policy Center.
The government pays out close to 100 million bills each and every month.
Social Security checks, Medicare payments to doctors, emergency relief for hurricane victims.
And all of those bills could be at risk if the debt limit isn't extended.
Many members of Congress don't want that extension linked to Harvey funding, but the Trump administration says without a higher debt limit, the check Congress writes for Harvey relief, it might just bounce. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Let's check the numbers. After the Dow's 234-point tumble yesterday, the 100-share index here in London now is down 0.6%. Stock index futures are little changed. After the rally in bonds yesterday, some retrenchment now in the U.S. The 10-year yield is up at 2.08%. Business is global. There's words today that the two largest economies in sub-Saharan Africa have started growing again after a period on the skids. It's oil-rich Nigeria and minerals-rich South Africa. Let's switch to Johannesburg, where we find Matt Davies, business reporter for our partner broadcaster, the BBC.
These economies are still very much struggling. They fell off the horse and both went into recession, particularly in Nigeria. The Nigerian economy relies heavily, almost entirely, on oil as an export. And we know what's happened to the price of oil lately. And that's essentially why the economy contracted by 1.5% in 2016. But the oil prices stabilized a little bit. So this is the reason why they're coming out of this big recession. They also think that these economies that are largely based on commodities should diversify away from it. And the argument in Nigeria is that they should concentrate much more on agriculture.
South Africa and Nigeria vie for the title of biggest African economy. At the moment, Nigeria wears that crown, although South Africa is seen as, quote, more developed. Just back from a construction site in central London that will be a shiny and expensive answer to those who worry London will become more of a backwater after Britain divorces itself from the European Union. It's a $20 billion train line tunneled east to west under London, set to fully open next year. Urban planning expert Tony Travers is a professor at the London School of Economics. He met us at the Overhaul Tottenham Court Road station. Thanks for joining us here in the drizzle.
Lovely to be here.
Now, London had a lot of train stations even before this project. What does this Crossrail do for London?
Well, what it does is to take pressure off the existing underground railway, the metro, the subway. And what's happening with Crossrail is a kind of intercity-style railway is being built underground, which is why it's so expensive, which will have 24 trains an hour. It'll add about 10% to central London or to the London transport capacity. So it's a huge project on its own.
There is some tension here with the timing, maybe even irony. This is a big London project at a time that voters, as part of this Brexit debate in the last few years, have been trying to send a message that there's more of Great Britain than just London.
London is a city of nearly 9 million people in the middle of a region of 21 million, which is by far the biggest city in the UK. Two-thirds of all the railway journeys made in the UK either start or finish or start and finish in London. So with that reliance on railway, public transport more generally, you'd expect London to get at any point in time much of the railway investment. But I think reflecting the debate about the Britain and the European Union and Brexit and the future, there is no question that as this project opens, as the Queen comes to open what's to be called, after all, the Elizabeth Line, it will be seen as a sort of symbol of Britain carrying on regardless, that, you know, show a new dawn, as it were, for the city. It's bound to be used like that.
But just to put a finer point on that, at a time when some say, well, post-Brexit, London will be diminished, at least opponents of Brexit might say something like that, here is this glowing new piece of infrastructure trying to make the opposite argument.
At the point it does open, there's no question that it will be used by the authorities in the city, the mayor, but also by UK government to say, you know, here is the evidence that, you know, London, Britain are still open for business, moving ahead. Things can get, you know, global Britain, all that stuff will be trotted out. And this will be evidence of how good and how easy it will all be.
A very intrepid Tony Travers, who's standing here with me outside Tottenham Court Road Station in the rain doing this interview. Professor Travers is a professor at the London School of Economics and is an urban planning expert. Professor, thank you.
Lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
And troubled Wells Fargo Bank could now face a barrage of lawsuits by customers in California. This after the California legislature voted to allow full-on lawsuits, even if customers agreed to mandatory arbitration. A judge would have to sign off on any suit. Recently, the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ended forced arbitration for bank and credit card disputes, but the California law would apply retroactively. From London this week, I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.